pilot that cleans up after
them. Yeah, Jim Baker and so
plays
forth.
Plays their favorite music. Built in.
Not my favorite music. Not exhaust the fans at this
has
late moment.
Hormonal discharge units that keep you
in
good
no
spirits the whole time.
Anymore.
The hormone infusion will keep you happy the whole time.
Well, now that we've settled
the pheromones
that,
distributed through the
and the unfair moans.
Aromatherapy treatment.
Just one lot of love. We're a
you
show that's all about.
I need love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, we were
always
trying to get
merged.
The past and the future to be all huggy on
the love show, but it didn't work out.
I feel love.
No, it didn't work.
I feel love.
Even though I paid $663 to get a love.
$663.
Missed out of summer.
Buck, but awkward.
Well, if you have to miss somebody.
I am
something.
Chicken before
a
my epoch.
I need love.
J.R. Bob Gobbs. And, of course, Mr. Breedlove.
Better give her some.
Well, I mean, give me a moment. I got to get myself together. Welcome to Not As Young As I Used To Be.
This is your Quonset hut.
All right.
Flash, this just in. Artificial brains control country.
Your Frankenstein computer god control cabinet on the dark side of the moon.
Verification system.
Now.
No verification system.
From the verification system
during the show.
No verification system. None.
Please remove yourself from the verification system.
I'm not going to take no for an answer.
How do I do this?
It's very easy. Let me show you how. Scroll down to the big V at the lower left-hand side of your screen and double-click it. And, well, you won't need me to tell you what happens afterward. On a Grecian Urn by John Keats. Still unravished bride of happiness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, sylvan historian, who canst thus express a flowery tale more sweetly than our rhyme? What leaf-fringed legend haunts about thy shape? Of deities or mortals, or of both, in Tempe or the dales of Arcady. What men or gods are these? What maidens loath? What mad pursuit? What struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels? What wild ecstasy? Melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, ye soft pipes, play on, not to the sensual ear, but more endeared, pipe to the spirit, ditties of no tone. Fair youth beneath the trees, thou canst not leave thy song, nor ever can those trees be bare. Bold lover, never, never shalt thou kiss. Though winning near the goal, yet do not grieve. Though thou hast not thy bliss, she cannot fade. Forever wilt thou love, and she be fair. Oh, happy. happy, happy boughs that cannot lose thy leaves, nor ever bid the spring adieu. And happy melodist, forever piping songs, forever new. More happy love, more happy, happy love, forever warm and still to be enjoyed, forever panting and forever young, all breathing human passions far above that leave the heart high, sorrowful and cloyed, the burning forehead and the parching tongue. Who are these coming to the sacrifice? To what green altar, O mysterious priest, leadst thou that heifer lowing at the skies, and all her silken flanks with garlands dressed? What little town, by river or seashore, or mountain built with peaceful citadel, is emptied of its folk this sacred morn? And little town, thy streets forevermore shall silent be, and not a soul to tell why thou art desolate can e'er return. O Attic shape, O attitude, with breed of marble men and maidens overwrought with forest branches and the trodden weed, thou silent form dost tease us out of thought as doth eternity. Cold pastoral, when old age shall this generation waste, thou shalt remain, in midst of other woe than ours, a friend to man, to whom thou sayest, beauty is truth, truth, beauty, that is all ye know on earth, and all ye need to know.
Offspring dictators like Hitler and Mussolini and
well, it's but past the hour of 11. I'm going to pop that pill. I'm going to take it right now. I don't care what happens. I'm going to take it.
With the dictators
and
the good guys.
It may take a while to take effect because I did drink all the liquid and
yes,
now it has to make its way in its scratchy way down my throat. Not that I wish
most grateful residents of earth who stand
block time the philosophical esophagus of the show with the roughage of knowledge. But here goes. Over the lips and past the gums. Look out, stomach. Here it comes.
We call them geniuses.
The gag reflex. That's no gag. I should drink something. It's just stuck back there.
Apple cheese.
Oh, there it goes. It's making its way down. Well, in a few minutes.
Please hold.
It should start taking its hold. And so just stand by.
Your attention is important to us.
Yes, we'll stand at attention for you. But for no one else. For everyone else, we'll stand at ease.
We will resume radio service.
Yes, radio service in your area will soon be resumed. And you shall be edified, enlightened, and consumed with the desire for more and ever more of its abundant store.
Do you remember the name of the
nutritive assimilation? Maybe there's something in the refrigerator. I'll just get some water out of the sink. This is hard to deal with.
Radio party.
Coming up, chicken.
us now.
Where's my Corvette page tweet?
It's the show with Michael Pepe.
But the show is most humbly happy when it receives studio guest Michael Pepe. Michael Pepe is even closer to achieving his goal. Like Achilles' tortoise, as he moves toward it, his speed diminishes. The question is not when, but if the goal shall be achieved.
No.
Michael J. Pepe's hard-hitting economics
That's
report.
That's right.
Here on the
That's
show,
right.
live on
That's
radio.
That's right, folks. We mince no words in going after the high muckety mucks.
That's right. We name the names and rake the mucks. Mucks. Muck.
Seriously, I am glad that they finally burned this guy, this ass, who runs the sacred subgenius church, that they finally caught up with. You know, everyone, of course, is so nuts about the sacred subgenius church, but they're totally corrupt. They're corrupted by businessmen, and the guy...
it's the money.
He had to, of course, resign in disgrace, and now he's up on charges that... which I'd love to see, presumably set up by
the
mob.
Yes, that sounds like a good
themselves.
Idea to me.
Yeah, it's basically, I think it's mob run as far as the implication I had about it in the thing that I saw.
But that means it's the other side that's running.
It's the criminals. Right. No. Everything is upside down.
Okay, I see.
It's all this illegal stuff. I don't understand exactly what is and is not sacred subgenius church. How could that not be corrupt, really? It is a vice, right?
Yes, I mean, and so there's always that attraction.
I'm sorry. You know, am I, like, leading away from the mic?
What mic?
Because I don't...
Step up to the mic, Pepe.
Yes, I forgot
how
again.
How about that?
I have your Bob. Sorry, I still have it. I have not used it.
Well, I don't know what to say.
I don't want to use the sacred subgenius church oil.
Yes, the sacred and...
I assume Bob burns a sacred flame.
Propane.
In any pipe that he burns.
Which makes you the vestal caper of it. And it seems like you're doing a good job.
Yes. Well, it's protected from anyone else stealing it, yes. That's a good thing. So, have you heard about the...
Jolly Green.
The plans to go to... Sacred Subgenius Church Museum? You've heard it here.
Well, I heard much idle talk.
Idle gossip.
Speculative
yes.
nature.
Yes.
And discussion of possibilities.
Yes.
Essential
That's
possibilities.
That's all I heard as well.
Because we all know that what has been done before ought theoretically to be possible to perform again.
Again. That's right.
Yes.
That's very true.
However, the conditions vary from the way
yes.
they were before. And so that may be a
yeah.
decisive factor. You might be able to, boy. Great, thanks.
But we don't want to wait. Well, do you have to prove it? Maybe you just say you're...
Then you'll have to go back to the back of the line, cringing in shame with your
That's what I'm afraid.
Tail between your legs. No, not enough.
Yeah.
time ago and a million miles away on a very dark night or in the middle of the day, where the trees have voices and the clouds have names and the fishes and the birds play peculiar games. In a very small house full of very big rooms, full of rutabagas, dental tools, alarm clocks, and brooms, there lived a funny family, a family of four. And though they didn't know it, there was maybe one more. Well, this family didn't care about the way it appeared, but while we're on the subject, this family was weird. So listen to the story. Wham-ba-lam, the story of the family. Wham-ba-lam, there was a mama and a papa. Wham-ba-lam, and a sister and a brother. Wham-ba-lam, and perhaps there was another. Wham-ba-lam, and a little tiny baby. Wham-ba-lam, so listen to the story, and I don't mean maybe. Listen to the story, and I don't mean maybe. Listen to the story, and I don't mean maybe, 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 maybe. I'm Daddy Duke Weird, and it's plain to see, no one in my profession does a job like me. I used to be a taxidermist, I am still. I would stuff all of the animals the hunters would kill, but I couldn't keep looking at their big brown eyes, and my life became a torment that I grew to despise, 'cause I couldn't work on something that made animals dead. So I had a great idea. I'd stuff vegetable instead. So I don't stuff mooses, wham-ba-lam, antelopes and gooses, wham-ba-lam, lions, bears, and rabbits, wham-ba-lam. I picked up on some new habits. I stuff carrots and tomatoes, wham-ba-lam, cucumbers and potatoes, wham-ba-lam, asparagus and cabbage, wham-ba-lam, and some big cauliflowers that can really be savage. He's a vegetable stuffer. Wham-ba-lam, let me tell you, nothing's tougher. Wham-ba-lam, but I see my wife is coming and she's one of a kind, so I'll turn the story over to her if you don't mind. I'll turn the story over to her if you don't mind. Oh, Fluster, my daughter, where are you? Oh, there, sit still and attend now to me. For once again I come with something to share, quite a lesson, I think you'll agree. Once more, if you're willing, I take up your time. I'll relate in a manner serene the particulars of the great topic I love, a young girl's guide to dental hygiene. Catch you later, Ma. I gotta be going. Catch you later, Ma. I gotta go somewhere. That's very interesting stuff. It's good to be knowing. Guess I'll catch you later, Ma.
Sit right there.
It's time to meet the dental family, our ivory soldiers hidden in our head, whom we can shield from getting cavities by brushing them before we go to bed. There are 32 teeth that grind and chop, 16 on the bottom, 16 on the top. In each jaw, each kind of tooth does the same. Oh,
here they are now. I'll just call them by name. First, the incisors at the front of the mouth. They're the ones that cut and slice.
If you treat us all right, we'll continue to bite. Just don't use us to bite down on ice.
Then come the sharp canines, four in each jaw, which all meat-eaters use to hold prey.
Since we're faithful to you, what we bite off, you chew. If you give us no bone, we won't stray.
Next come the premolars, two on each side, which help chew your food up so fine.
We each have two roots, and we're in cahoots with the big molars next in the line.
Lastly, those molars, imposingly large, and each has three roots underneath.
We crush and we grind when you put us in charge. We're the biggest and strongest of teeth.
Well, that's really very interesting. Catch you later, Ma. Catch you later, Ma. Gotta go to the store. All that stuff about the teeth. I'll be chewing and digesting. Guess I'll check you later, Ma.
Wait! There's more. The hideous goblin of tooth decay is always searching for easy prey. He lurks around where can be found those who brush their teeth from day to day. If brushing's what you forget to do, he may be coming to visit you. The more that you eat of sugar and sweets, the more you will see of this fellow. The more likely you'll look in the mirror one day. Look in the mirror and say, it's the hideous goblin of tooth decay. Now, Fluster, my daughter, I hope you have learned from the sight of our teeth on parade. I'm sure you are wiser from what you've discerned from my audio-visual aid. So run out now and play. Try to have a nice day. I can, for I know I bequeath what enables my child to survive in the wild. An intimate knowledge of teeth.
I haven't been to a dentist in decades. Because, you see, dentists like to pull teeth. They're thinking of that boat they want to get. Or, maybe a new water heater. That can set you back. And, of course, they'll have a good reason for pulling a tooth or two. But what they don't say is that then your other teeth will rejoice in the freedom of not being crowded by having a big enamel dude right next to them, and they will start to drift in your jaw. Well, these other teeth are moving. We're going to have to pull them, too. So out they come. And finally, you're some mumbling septuagenarian with a hideous clacking set of false teeth. Is this what you want? It's not what I want. So let us pass on and describe some of the artistic and cultural events taking place here in the city of San Francisco. On May 16th at the Mabuhay Gardens, all ages are welcome. When Rage Bait presents many bands, Spunk from L.A., False Flag, Bombshell, Madrona, and by special appearance, Juna. Beginning at 6 p.m., $20 pre-sale at the door, 25, but you'll want to pay it. You'll want to be there. On Tuesday, May 26th, on Broadway, at the Theater Nightclub, 435 Broadway in San Francisco, Major Accident will occur. Monster Squad, Ultra Sect, and Cross Checked. That's Tuesday, May 26th. 7:30 noise, 7 o'clock doors, all ages are welcome. Dive into our rumbustious mosh pit. First show in San Francisco. Remember, tomorrow belongs to you and me. Listening to the Ask Dr. Hal show live on radio.
Not real radio, only a podcast.
Live on radio from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. from Friday to Saturday. That's where you are. Listen to this show, and you'll get far. Fly as far as the nearest star. United States.
Found the gold watch engraved to Adolf from
Goering and the boys.
In order to form a more perfect union.
Will whoever lost this watch claim it from the Israeli agent in the lobby?
Establish justice. Ensure domestic tranquility.
Is that why they're all on the free world?
Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare. Do ordain and establish this constitution. Oh, did I mention we also wish to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity? And that's
retained from original transcriptions.
Why we present this constitution.
Take recording
of the United States of America.
Everything you will hear is written.
Thunders of the upper deep, far, far beneath in the abysmal sea, his ancient, dreamless, uninvaded sleep, the Kraken sleepeth. Faintest sunlights flee about his shadowy sides. Above him swell huge sponges of millennial growth and height. And far above, into the sickly light, from many a wondrous grot and secret cell, unnumbered and enormous polypi, winnow with giant arms, the slumbering green. There hath he lain for ages and will lie, a until the latter fire shall heat the deep. Then, once by men and angels to be seen, in roaring he shall rise and on the surface die.
Of years ago, giant dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Great families inhabited the dinosaurian clades. The theropods and their companions, the ornithopods. This latter contained the thyreophora, or shield bearers, like the stegosaurus, with its 20 alternating plates and two pairs of phagomizers at the tip of the tail. Why do they call them phagomizers? Well, according to lore, one day a caveman named Fag got too close to these spikes and, well, it wasn't pretty. But you'll find that most workers in the field label these tail spikes on the stegosaurus phagomizers. Now let's talk about the stegosaurus for a little. Because this is my show. We don't have to talk about Guam or Custer's Last Stand, or the tank that went backwards in time. Instead, we're going to talk about the Dinosauria. Now, Stegosaurus is an interesting case, interesting to some of us, though by no means, according to those specimens which have been unearthed, the largest of the Dinosauria. It certainly is one of the more elaborate and spectacular. I'll try to carry on despite the disco inferno next door, which the microphones can't help but pick up. And the chattering class outside, yakking, smoking cigarettes, giggling, hooting. Anyway, we're going to think about Stegosaurus armatus, or Stegosaurus stenops. But you know, there were many stegosaurs. There was the Dasentrurus, larger than the canonical Stegosaurus, which had a completely different arrangement of spikes and plates. And there were Asian variations. But by the end of the Jurassic, the picturesque Stegosaurus had plodded away to join his forefathers in the afterlife. These creatures were replaced by other thyreophorans, the armored ankylosaurs and nodosaurs. But I don't give two farts in a bottle for them. I'm talking about the stegosaurs. There are mysteries connected with this critter. Of the stegosaurus, it was said that it had two brains. You will observe by these remains, the creature had two sets of brains. One in the head, the usual place. The other at the spinal base. Thus, he could reason a priori as well as a posteriori. If something slipped the forward mind, it was rescued by the one behind, as he thought twice before he spoke. He had no judgment to revoke. Thus he could think without congestion upon both sides of any question. Well, this is inaccurate. What the Stego had in his hips was an enlarged glycogen body to help it move the legs and tail. His brain was rather small, not an intellectual giant among the dinosauria. Humans, too, have the same thing in your lower spine. Do you think your orders to move your legs come all the way from the brain up at the tippy top? You know, nerve impulses travel at a certain speed. If you were a huge, lengthy dinosaur and you were bitten on the tip of the tail, it might be a couple of minutes before it registered in your head. But the Stegosaurus is only about 30 feet long, as found, so they say. But I believe it grew much larger. Much larger. Because look at the design of the creature. It is heavily graviportal. Its limb arrangement resembles those of the huge sauropods. Its feet are plantigrade, not digitigrade. That means, I'm talking about the hind feet, that there is no heel, that the foot itself rests entirely on the ground. There is no hock on a Stegosaurus. Just like a giant Brontosaurus. Why should it do that unless it needed to support much more weight than it actually has? And then the forefeet are also like the forefeet of the giant sauropods. They are essentially walking on their toes. And this is common throughout the dinosauria. Dinosaurs had longer hind legs than front legs. Only the brachiosaurs are the exception that proves the rule. The most archaic dinosaur forms have longer hind legs and shorter front legs. And the basal dinosaur is like a turkey-sized creature that runs along the ground with huge, thick drumsticks of legs and small forelimbs. This was taken to an extreme, as we all know, by the enormous Tyrannosaurus with its two tiny, two-fingered arms. Also present in its Asian relative, the Tarbosaurus batar. So, all this clabber you hear about how birds are dinosaurs is actually wrong and asserted by a cult that has risen in paleontology. A cult that the late great paleontologist Dr. Ernest Mayr called cladism. And this is the name I give it too. The idea that you can put all the anatomical features of dinosaurs into a computer-driven database and have the computer tell you exactly where it belongs in evolutionary relation to produce an answer which has no equivocation, no variance, is neatly slotted and wrong. In my opinion, there are many reasons to believe that. Birds do not agree in every particular with dinosaurs, as the adherents of this theory claim. But they don't know anything about bird evolution. They haven't studied it, as I have. Yes, all these years, this lifetime of study of prehistoric creatures has now got me backed into a corner where people think that I'm a crank who does not believe in the most forward thinking in paleontology. All I have to say is look at the people who are advocating this. Some of them are even fundamentalist preachers. Even Bob Backer is an evangelical preacher. Did you know that? How about Dr. Jack Horner? He's a great paleontologist, and I don't give him enough credit. But he's dyslexic. He can't read the scientific material. He's a firm adherent of hairy dinosaurs and other loathsome improbabilities. It has been known, but is not acknowledged very much, for many years that we have fossil impressions of the skin of all types of dinosaurs, including the famous Tyrannosaurus Rex, which has scales everywhere. But they say it was covered with dino fuzz. There are so many reasons to disbelieve this. But what you forget, and you should never forget, when looking at the incredible past of animal life, is that you are viewing an entire ecosystem in which each member had its own solution to problems involving thermoregulation, diet, a niche in which they could operate and pass on their DNA to future generations. What if all we had from this era, what if we were aliens investigating the fossils of today and you unearthed a porcupine? Would you insist that all creatures had long quills growing from them? Even if you examine the living animals and birds of today, there are many different solutions as far as thermoregulation is concerned. Tuna fish are warm-blooded. Certain birds can reduce their body temperature overnight to 40 degrees because it helps them, that's why. Well, what about this cladism? What about cladistics? Can you produce a cladogram of modern creatures? Yes, it has been tried. And you know what? It comes out full of mistakes. Well, if this is about creatures that we can see and observe around us every day, how far afield must it go when talking about fossil organisms for which we only have the bones? And then these cladists make preposterous claims that they have found blood vessels in the bones of tyrannosaurs. To which I say, give me a break. These things are more than 65 million years old. The pyramids of Egypt are yesterday compared to that. No blood vessel is going to survive that. And it's telling to me that the person who reported that, which is embraced by these fanatics, is another fundamentalist Christian who says that her faith guided her to the discovery. Give me a frickin' break. Anyway, let me get back to Stegosaurus. You see, Stegosaurus also has the long hind legs. The long hind legs and the short forelegs. The forelegs could have been jointed in several ways. We don't have the surrounding musculature, but we do know that there are two plates which attach to the scapula. These are called the coracoid process. Where else are these found? In the giant sauropods, the huge titanosaurs, brontosaurs, diplodocids, and so forth. Brachiosaurus has them. A giant 80-ton critters have them. Why should the Stegosaurus have it? Unless it also attains a considerable size, if allowed to, and not eaten by roving packs of carnosaurs. You know, not every creature in the wild grows to a full, ripe old age. But one way to be unmolested by these carnosaurs is to grow big. To grow too big for them to be able to attack. Now, some workers said that Stegosaurus only had a single row of dorsal plates. But this has been disproven. Now we know that it did have the alternating plates depicted by Charles R. Knight and other great paleo artists. Except for one thing. From the head up to the high point of the back, that row of plates is paired. And they only start to alternate as they grow to an immense size. So it has both paired plates and alternating plates. What it doesn't have is a single row of plates. Others have depicted Stegosaurus as covered with pebbly osteoderms in the skin. Well, that would be pretty good. That would make it a painful process for a toothy carnivore to take a bite out of a Stegosaurus flank steak. But these were placed there because they were always found with the remains, but we had no idea where they went. Well, recently we found just where they go. And that's not dotted across the outer skin of the animal. It is concentrated in a stony pouch, which is right under the neck. Why have that? Because that's where your carnivorous dinosaur goes. If it can bite off the head of its prey, the prey is unable to defend itself very much. Although some of these critters could keep going, the head was not the most important part. Still, you break the connection between the head and the rest of the body, you have yourself a meal. You can't bite on the top, dorsal plates. You can't bite on the bottom, pebbly osteoderms. You see about that? See? That's what I think. And something else the stego has is a long retractile tongue. Helps it feed. The front of its mouth has a bird-like beak. A rampithecus attached to the front of the jaw. And in the mandible, a beak-like structure which actually travels back toward the hinge point of the jaw. Where is the hinge point of the jaw? It's at the very back of the skull. And the muscle which opens the jaw in both the saurischians and ornithischians attaches behind the ear, the tympanic opening, because all of these dinos could hear quite well. They would need to. They'd need to know if something big and hungry was sneaking up on them. Now, here's another thing. In all these Spielberg movies and other things, dinosaurs roar all the time, and they roar when they attack. That's not a very good strategy. You roar when you're coming, and your prey will take pains to remove itself from the vicinity. No, these big theropods were silent. They would come right up on you and bite you, and that would be that. However, they would roar and make marvelous music, if you have an ear for it, during the mating time. Then their booming calls would stretch a great deal. These creatures, the dinosauria, well, they are the descendants of the archosauria. And are there archosaurs around today? You bet there are. Crocodilians. The alligator, the crocodile, the gavial, the mugger of India, the salty of Australia. These are living representatives of the group from which the dinosauria evolved. We have other types of reptiles today. Squamates, meaning the lizard groups. And snakes. Where do they come from? They descended from lizards. From a particular group. The varanid lizards. Like the Komodo dragon. The Komodo dragon, the world's largest living lizard, is a great big thingamajig. And you don't want it anywhere near you. It will attack you. If it bites you, you will not survive. Not because it has poison, but because its mouth is so filthy and full of decaying animal matter that, you just don't want to be bitten. And they have plenty of teeth and plenty of bite force. But as big as they are, their ancestors, their immediate ancestors, were far bigger. And these dragons were hunted by tiny humans, given the unofficial name of hobbits by scientists. They attacked and were attacked by the huge Megalania prisca, which is the name of the ancestral varanid. Now, one thing these big lizard brutes have is a flickering forked tongue that flicks in and out. And this is still present in their descendants, the serpentiforms, the snakes. Back in the ancient times of misted and ebullient seas and cooling shores, in lost reptilia's empires, the varanids, some of them, went back to the ocean, which had birthed all vertebrate beings so many eons, lustrums, and epicycles ago. And in the oceans, they grew enormous, whale-sized, though they possessed the entire dental battery, the tooth row of varanid lizards. Their legs became flippers, paddles, to propel them through the oceans. And there were freshwater versions, too. You wouldn't want to go swimming. You wouldn't want to dip your toe in the water at that particular time. I always recommend against it. And the tail of the giant varanids, let's call them mosasaurs or the species Tylosaurus, was a heterocercal tail, a term that ichthyologists use to describe the uneven tail of sharks, cartilaginous skeleton predators, older almost than time itself. So your giant sea serpent monster had the tail. And what else did it have? It came from the varanids, so it too had that flickering tongue that shot in and out to detect molecules and tell it what it needed to know. Who else here on poor old planet Earth has that tongue? Well, I'll tell you, because I've seen them in the wild in Arizona, where I used to live. The Gila monster. Yes, that must be related to the varanids, because it, too, has the flickering tongue. And it is the only poisonous lizard known to science. There are two species, with some variants which we shall not mention. The northern one is Heloderma suspectum, and the Mexican Gila monster, Heloderma horridum. You don't want these things to bite you because, for one thing, unlike a snake, which will give you a peck and install a lot of venom that'll put you in a world of hurt, or, depending on the bite, maybe just a continent of hurt, possibly a small town of hurt, or a gated community of hurt. A snake doesn't want to squirt all its venom into you. It knows only a small amount will hold it up its reputation, and the venom is bioenergetically difficult to produce. Only a baby snake who hasn't learned how to bite, a baby rattlesnake will squirt its entire venom into you, so you never want to get bitten by one of them. They're more dangerous than the big ones. But the Gila monster has a different strategy. Instead of just giving you a peck, it latches on and it chews you, and with each motion of the jaw, more venom is squirted in. And there's no way to get it to let go. They've tried cutting off the head. The head still chews away at you. No, you've got to let them alone. And basically, you've got to treat them the way you treat all animals in the wild, which is to leave them the bleep alone. They will not harm you. They want nothing to do with you. Let them alone. Why can't you just let them alone? Such fun here on the radio. We when you can ride your own hobby horse and talk about things that no one is interested in but yourself. Well, that's why I got a show. Why don't you get a show? There are some open slots on this radio, whatever it is. You could have your own show. Talk about your obsessions. Build up a fan base. Soon, soon, we'll be returning to the moon. We, that is, the human race. Some people think that next the human race must travel outward into outer space.
Every minute and every hour.
But I believe I would be inclined, if they indeed should go, to stay behind. Why must we desecrate the unprofaned? Though earth may be, must other worlds be stained? And in the end, then, what strange hands and eyes shall know our truths and recognize our lies? So you see, we're going back to the moon and we'll be there soon. The Artemis expedition went around the moon farther away from the earth than anybody else has done. And the next phase will be the descent toward the surface. A terrible problem was discovered. The moon is incredibly toxic. Its surface, or regolith, has been pounded by micrometeorites for millions of years. There is no atmosphere to stop these space bullets from hitting every inch of ground. And therefore, everything is turned into a tiny little piece of rock. So small that you wouldn't want to breathe it or get any on you, would you? It would chop up your lungs. If it's on your skin, it would eat its way into your skin and slice you up. But they solved that problem. It is simply a matter of having an electrical charge that repels them so they don't get on you. And now, every spacesuit has a device built into it that produces just such a negative charge. Problem solved. And of course, when we get to the moon, we could roof over some craters or set off some explosive devices, create a nice deep pit to hide in, get down below the regolith area where the rock is still primordial, and set up housekeeping. What a nice place. Of course, there's nothing alive, but there'd be you. You'd be alive, and you'd only weigh a sixth of what you weigh now. That's right. Take your weight, divide it by six, that's what you'd weigh. You'd weigh